Hello, and thank you for listening to the Skeptics in the Pub online podcast. This unedited audio is taken from Skepticamp 2024 and was recorded in front of a live audience in Manchester on the 18th of October 2024. A video of this, and many of the recordings hosted by Skeptics in the Pub online, are still available on our YouTube channel. We hope you enjoy this podcast, and if you would like to support what we do, you can join our Patreon. Find us at Patreon, Skeptics in the Pub, online.
Welcome back to Skeptics in the Pub online, Skepticamp. Allow me to introduce myself. I'm Jo. Those of you who know our channel will need no introduction. If you don't know him from his impressive facial hair, you will know him as our resident question setter. It's Igor. So, introducing our first speaker, who probably doesn't need any introduction in his own right. Ladies and gentlemen, give it up for Cass Peters.
So, yes, they say to write what you know, and if there is one thing that disabled people know, it is other people's medical history. One disability scholar referred to this truism as the rolling focus group. Right? The visible markers of our disability attract those that seek medical answers. A personal favorite of mine was the cab driver who asked if I thought his aunt's sudden deafness might have been caused by her recent COVID jab. His reasoning was that because COVID messes with your sense of taste, clearly the vaccine would mess with other senses. Right? This is flawless logic, I think you'll agree. But the thing that I hear most about is pain, right? Shoulder pain, knee pain, whatever. If it's got nerves, I have heard it complained about. And when I suggest to the person who's just told me that walking any sort of distance is agony, that perhaps they might consider a mobility aid, suddenly the excuses come out, right? I'm too young, I'm not ready to give up, it's not that bad. I have heard them, but I know better than to come to Skepticamp with just anecdotes, so let's look at some data. In one study commissioned by a British scooter manufacturer, 57% of respondents said that they would be unwilling to use currently available mobility aids because they feared it would affect their social status. Only about 15% said they'd be willing to use them on a first date and 20% on a night out with friends. Now, research tells us that underuse and non-use of needed devices can cause pain, excess disability, and other personal and societal costs, such as the inefficient use of finite medical resources. So these numbers really should be concerning to us. There's a lot of reasons that somebody might not use a mobility aid, even when it could be helpful. Obviously, there are structural and economic reasons, right? So this push rim here, not the wheel, just the rim, was 190 quid. And so was the other one. So these issues exist, but they are way outside of the scope of a 10-minute talk. So what I'm going to focus on today is the stories that we tell ourselves about disability and assistive tech, both because it can be instructive for larger conversations, but also because it's something that we can actually have an impact on as individuals. So taking on a mobility aid can threaten our sense of self. It tells us something about ourselves that we might not want to be true. Now, that can be a transition between non-disabled and disabled, or it could just be a simple progression of age, right? Participants across several studies rated assistive tech highly when it was used for short-term rehab, but those opinions fell off sharply when talking about it as a part of your long-term care. Right? Needing that tech means something. So allow me to introduce you to the concept of internalized ableism. So if you grew up in an ableist society, and let me assure you that you did, you will have internalized some of that messaging about disabled people, and you can turn that on yourself. So if you think that disability is a source of shame, right, then you will be ashamed at the idea of labeling yourself as disabled. And we can do this even while we support our disabled friends. So, right, you might not come up to me and say, hey, you've given up because you're in a wheelchair. But that's a really common thing for people to tell themselves. Oh, my goodness. It is time for my medication. I apologize for that. I thought I shut that alarm off. Right, so where we are. Okay. Right, so internalized prejudice can be really insidious. Here is the thing. It is okay to feel a little bit weird about taking on a piece of assistive technology because you have been told such awful things about it. Just as we'd understand if somebody is deconstructing from a toxic faith culture and they feel a little bit icky about their own sexuality, right? As skeptics, we can understand that these shameful messages are untrue, but also that it's going to take work to shed them. So I am not here to shame anyone, especially because it would make me a goddamn hypocrite considering how long it took me to take on my first cane, but also because we know it doesn't work, right? Shame is not effective here, and it would probably be cruel even if it worked. So researchers have found that the stories that we tell ourselves about, they have a significant impact on our likelihood to use assistive technology. So if a cane signifies frailty and vulnerability, it's significantly less likely to get used than if it signifies independence and safety. And breaking down those stories and how best to detangle them is not always easy, right? There's differences across race and age and probably other stuff. So for example, in one study, Hispanic participants were much more likely to use personal assistants, which were usually family members, than assistive tech. And when asked about a hypothetical user of assistive technology, their assumption was that they would be very lonely and isolated. And researchers found that this could have an impact on their likelihood to use that assistive tech themselves because that's what it signified to them. And so that's a very different thing than, say, social status that we need to disentangle. It pushes different social buttons. So there's no one thing that fixes this issue, but we do know a couple of commonalities. Right? Unsurprisingly, respondents that self-identify as disabled are much more likely to use their assistive tech because it's less of a threat to their identity. However, that threat's not entirely gone because we also know that there is a hierarchy of mobility aids. In general, it goes less noticeable to more. So a cane is less stigmatized to a walker, which is less stigmatized to a chair. But there's a difference in age here because manual chairs are much less desirable to older respondents than younger respondents. And that's partly due to the fact that older folks see themselves as not being able to move themselves around in their chair. So to them, a manual chair is a loss of independence. Again, it's not about the aid, it's about what it means to its user. Respondents with the lowest opinion of disability were among the least likely to use assistive tech, and they were the most likely to abandon social obligations rather than use it. So we can see it having an impact on their day-to-day lives. You're more likely to utilize your assistive tech if you know other disabled people. Now, obviously, that effect is stronger if you're friends or have some other close relationship, but you can see the effect even if it's just a visibly disabled stranger in the same physical space. So invite your disabled friends out for drinks. It can have a positive knock-on effect for society. Not only do we have to tackle the stories that we tell ourselves about ourselves, we also have to contend with what kind of reaction we expect to see from the public. So fear of social consequences is another significant driver of underuse. Even in studies that control for things like equipment and training, where we don't see any apparent structural reason, we still see a significant minority of users abandoning their assistive tech and reporting social stigma and fear thereof as their reasons. One common concern across a variety of studies is the fear that other people will assume that the tech user is faking it or putting it on for attention or perks. This is particularly common among people who become gradually disabled. Taking on the label of disability can be seen as giving up or feeling sorry for yourself. Unsurprisingly, minority folks were much more likely to report abuse when taking advantage of things like priority seating and early boarding. But you do see an interesting blip in the data here, actually, because there are some invisibly disabled folks who report eagerness to use visible tech to essentially mark themselves as disabled as a way to avoid those accusations and abuse. And just as a side note here, a recent study by Crohn's and Colitis UK found that 93% of respondents felt that challenging a, quote, healthy-looking person when using a disabled loo counted as standing up for the rights of the disabled. Don't be that guy. Not every disability is visible. Right? Anyway, we know the stories that we need to tell to combat underuse are going to vary by demographic. Younger folks respond better to stories about independence, while older folks tend to prioritize safety. And a lot of folks respond well to aesthetics. In one study, several respondents reported absolutely needing that fancy pink walker, despite previously telling researchers that they didn't need a mobility aid at all. A respondent said they'd feel cool or snazzy using the fancy walker, whereas the standard one made them feel, quote, old. And this is important. In multiple studies, respondents complained that there's not enough attention paid to the aesthetic aspects of assistive technology. And this can be interpreted as a social message that people with disabilities aren't worthy of beauty. Right? Ultra-utilitarian aids can depersonalize their users and reduce them to their medical needs. And for folks with medical trauma, it can be a massive trigger, which, again, will result in underuse. Steering dangerously close to structural waters here, but just your reminder, aesthetics is a part of human meaning-making, and you are allowed to put skulls or rhinestones or go-faster flames on your mobility aid. No one can tell you otherwise. And this brings me to the reason that I wanted to give this talk. So I want everyone here to turn their skeptical eyes inward and critically examine the stories that you tell yourself about disability. And even though I've been focusing a lot on mobility aids, remember that disability is so much more than that. So if you've been finding it hard to follow conversations at the pub, maybe ask yourself why you haven't booked that hearing exam. And I want you to give yourself grace, acknowledging that you have had decades of garbage training. And I want you to go out into the world ready to remind people that disability is not a bad word, and that a disabled life is still a good life. Right? Remember to take your meds, and thank you for your time. Cutting it close there.
Lots and lots of questions.
Oh, jeez. I'll be here all weekend.
Question from Anonymous. What pressure speaking for disabled people? When someone asks you a question, do you worry that people will think disabled people are funny, grumpy, etc.?
I'm hoping I understand the question properly. You often end up feeling like the ambassador for an entire group of people when you're visibly disabled. So if you are justifiably upset about something that's going on, you have to worry about, you know, being the bad cripple, being the angry disabled person that's going to make it harder for the next person. I imagine it's a very similar. For folks with different skin tones, that you just feel like you're the ambassador and you have to put on a good face for a lot of situations.
Another one from Anonymous. If you're able-bodied, is there an established etiquette for talking to someone in a wheelchair? Do you remain standing, crouch down, grab a chair, etc.?
Remain standing in general, make eye contact, you know, talk directly to us as opposed to whoever we're with. Sometimes in crowded situations, it can be really hard to hear people because it's only a couple of feet, but, you know, in a crowded bar, that can be a lot. So if somebody's having a hard time hearing, just ask, hey, would you mind, do you want me to kneel down? And when in doubt, ask.
I think we might get two more. Is there a fear of becoming long-term dependent on AIDS, even if it's only needed temporarily?
This is such a common thing that people report. Well, you know, you don't want to use the cane too often because then you'll become dependent on it. It's a really common thing that people hear, even from people like physiotherapists who really should know better. If you need the cane, you need the cane.
And the last question is from Igor.
Yay!
Is the problem of able-bodied people using accessibility infrastructure ever a problem?
When you're talking about like drunk guys at the pub using the accessible loo because there's a queue for it, then yes, obviously. But there are people who, you know, might not look disabled that would need that infrastructure. And honestly, when we think about, it's better to think about things in terms of inclusive design. So designing physical spaces that are better for everyone. So, you know, I find the push button to open the automatic door super useful, but so is somebody who's going to be carrying a lot of bags, or a mother with a child who might not have an extra hand to spare. So if we think about making the physical environment inclusive for everyone, we will have fewer problems than thinking about, like, oh, well, this is only for me.
Awesome. Ladies and gentlemen, give it up. Cass Peters.
That was the Skeptics in the Pub online podcast. For more sceptical content, including information about future talks, please like us on Facebook, follow at SITP on Twitter, or head to our website at sitp.online, where you'll also find a link to all the ways you can get in touch with us, including our Discord server. Music in this episode was provided by Thula Bora and used with permission. Until next time, thanks for listening.